Hello and welcome to Real Geeks. I am Crash and Burnett. With me, as always, is Mike Montgomery.
And join us as once again we take a trip deep into my childhood.
Your childhood is really low production value. Like, fuck, I was watching Star Trek. I have at least respectable production value to look back on. This admirable attempt at backscreen projections made. All around, well done. I'm pretty sure I made movies of this quality when I was 7 using a camcorder.
Now, at the same time, though, now you say that you were watching things with respectable production value because you were watching the original Star Trek.
Yeah, I don't watch Final Frontier. I don't watch Final Frontier, to be very clear.
But I would like to point out that at no point in this movie is an obviously styrofoam stalactite that looks like a giant dick.
You say that like it's a bad thing. That's what this film needed. A stalactite in the form of a giant dick. And the ghost of Disney just being like, "Ooh, it's my penis." This is Escape to Witch Mountain! I figured we should say that before we continue down that fucking line.
The engine will start now.
Those two kids are witches. Find them.
Now from Walt Disney Productions, a motion picture of unearthly power, Escape to Witch Mountain.
Well,
hunted.
You have power. Well, I want to be able to understand these powers.
Their only hope is Escape to Witch Mountain, rated G.
The movie with the opening title sequence that makes you think Disney had the contract for James Bond Jr.
The movie intro that immediately made me think, oh, am I watching Robin Hood? No. Aw, disappointment. Disappointment. But also, like, what if they made a kiddie version of The Prisoner?
Yes.
Very
yes.
The Prisoner vibes. Hmm. Which, Frank, like, there are great aspects, there are bad aspects. One of the best aspects of this movie is Donald Pleasant, of course, as always. But his character could easily be replaced entirely by a faceless, floating white ball.
And that's so true. But also, there's a simple fact that with Escape to Witch Mountain, you have a movie that has Donald Pleasant in it. But he's not the main villain. How often does that happen?
And it's really odd that, like, he's the mostly villain. He's the face of villainy. But the greater villain that he represents is more just kind of, like, somewhat humorous, but a rich guy. That's it. He's a rich guy with weird hobbies. He's not attempting to take over the world. He's not going to use the children's power for a very specific nefarious plan. It's more like just general gathering and hoarding. Just, ooh, that could be a thing. Ooh, that could be a thing. Ooh, that could be a thing. I have no idea what their powers are and how it works, but, you know, like, better me than you.
Now,
like, what an aimless villain.
Look. He, as long as we're making Star Trek comparisons, and there is one more that's going to come later, but the villain of this movie, he's like the mirror universe of Uncle, what's his name, from Annie.
Oh, Rich Daddy Warbucks. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, he's the anti-Daddy Warbucks, including the fact that Daddy Warbucks has charm and charisma. And no pupils, whereas this guy has no charm, no charisma, and pupils.
I mean, at the very least, I think in terms of the actors, in a perfect world, Ray Milland and Donald Pleasance should have switched roles.
I mean, yes, in a perfect world, Ray Milland wouldn't be in this film because it's not his kind of film. If anything, he maybe would have been Jason O'Day, But really, he shouldn't have been. He should not have been in this film. I only mean that in the sense that the kind of characters he excels at are not present in this movie. Donald Pleasant, kind of stalking people knowingly. This works. He's very good at like knowing too much and not letting you know, or trying to follow people. The man was an original Blofeld. The man was Blofeld. When you think Ernst Stavros Blofeld or Dr. Evil, you're thinking of Donnie. The same guy who was the doctor in the original Halloween movies, Michael Myers' doctor, and he just like shows up now and then in a big old trench coat going, "Watch out, he's crazy!" Thanks, Donnie. And he was in The Great Escape, which I always forget. But like, everyone was great in The Great Escape.
That's true, yeah.
It's like, he's great in this. No lie, he's great because he's playing a very 70s kind of villain that he especially excelled at the time, where it's just... it's someone who is benignly nefarious. They themselves are not mustache twirling. They're not going to like cut you. They're not going to like threaten you dangerously in some insulting, offensive way. They're not going to murder your entire family, but they will not be stopped. They'll just keep coming out of professionalism. Professionalism.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he said, like, you would meet his character, and you'd just be like, there's something wrong with you? I'm just not quite sure what it is.
Yeah, it's like, not every sociopath is a bloodthirsty maniac, but when you meet, like, someone who is, like, they're a sociopath who still do something like this, it's still a person kidnapping children. Like, to be very clear, this man and his boss, Aristotle Bolt, great name, kidnapped children. They're bad people. But he does it in this way of like, no, I have no feeling about it one way or another. I am employed by Mr. Bolt, and what Mr. Bolt says is what I do. And like, that's the through line. That's the ethical over under. There's nothing else to his character. And where that could make him thin, it makes him kind of like the Terminator.
Oh, that is so true. Oh, that is so, so true.
Would seem drag me now. Oh my god, he is like some sort of non-giving up school guy.
Starring in this are Kim Richards and Ike Eisenman as Tia and Tony Malone. Kim later went on to be a main cast member in, I believe, the Housewives of Beverly Hills. Quickly checking that out. Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. She's like an OG member. And Ike actually had a full career, including appearing in Fantastic Journey, which, like, that would have been a much better cheesy fucking thing to watch. and actually, more Star Trek. He was Midshipman Peter Preston in Wrath of Khan. I know. How could we forget Midshipman Peter Preston?
I was just like, I knew that there was somewhere else I knew that name from.
he was so important to the plot. I mean, pivotal. Hey, listen, he was in more Star Trek than I was, so fuck me.
Well, you know what? I'm just going to bring this out now, but I assume you have the cast list in front of you?
Yes.
You scroll down, because there's another Star Trek connection.
No, I'm not finding it, because I'm also to be fair, I am still rather tired from the hurricane. Professor Robert Crater from the Man Trap. Damn, deep cuts. Deep cuts.
Oh, you are so close though. You are so close.
Dudes in the Man Trap. I am on. If there's another one, good.
Well,
Man Trap.
On IMDb, you want the guy who's listed right underneath Alfred Ryder.
Oh, I'm not looking at IMDb.
When Lawrence Montaigne, that name might sound familiar.
Lawrence Montaigne. Monty Montaigne. Money, mini, money, Odysseus, Stone. Nope.
Yep.
Stone.
I
don't know who Stone is. Oddly enough, I've actually hit a wall and I'm like, who? I don't know her.
You remember Amok Time?
Ah. Oh, okay. Cool.
There we go.
Okay.
Wow.
Which one matters more? Ooh, I mean, like, yeah. Man Trap versus Amok Time. That is a complicated one. Amok Time, obviously more important overall for the story, but Man Trap, you know, like, you wouldn't have anything with that fucking Man Trap actually winning in the ratings. Ah, fuck!
Was Man Trap the Pizza Bats? Fuck, I can't remember now.
I never thought of the Pizza Bats. Man Trap is the salt vampire.
Okay, that's not the one I'm thinking of then.
Pizza Bat. I know what you're talking about, but I never considered calling them Pizza Bats before.
That in terms of fandom conversation, that's the only term I've ever heard them referred to as.
Pizza Bats. I like it. I like it. How disinteresting is this film? We're talking about other things. Escape to Witch Mountain is based off a novella by Alexander H. Key. All of this, like that book was written for kids. This movie was directed for kids. This is a solid mid Walt Disney lifespan. Not quality necessarily. At the time, it was quite good. Live action and kids adventure. Like, this is the kind of film that I feel the book was written in 1968, and I'm pretty sure Walt died, like, I don't know if Walt ever read it, and Walt died 2 years earlier, but this is right up his alley in terms of vision. Like, when they optioned this this book, it was definitely like, oh yeah, no, Walt would have said yes. Without doubt. And the kind of movie that comes out has a lot more to do with Mary Poppins and Chee Chee Bang Bang than it does Tron and The Black Hole, despite being closer in time to both Tron and The Black Hole.
Well, yeah, but also in terms of movies that this is closer to, I would throw Pinocchio on that list.
Also Pinocchio. That just didn't come to mind specifically because I had recently seen the Tom Hanks one and therefore does not compute. Does not compute.
Fair enough. But like for me, when I was watching it, the sequence when they're at the mansion and basically being handed everything a child could possibly want in life.
Yeah.
Was just giving me major Pleasure Island vibes.
I mean, but like, if I recall at the time, it was like such a Disney trope to be like, oh, so, you know, you can tell kids if you're in a trap if they give you everything you want. And like,
oh, yeah.
This has a lot of 101 Dalmatians in it. A lot of 101 Dalmatians. And, like, it was just kind of like Disney cliches at the time. Like how the kids never use their powers offensively or even defensively. It's more like for fun games and maybe a little bit of impishness. The fact that Tony's power has to manifest through him playing a harmonica is just like, I can smell the park rides from here. Try the churros.
there was the sequence where Tony has to take on that bully at the foster home, who, again, speaking of cliches.
Yeah, again, speaking of cliches, and who never comes back despite having more character than, like, half of the villains in this movie. But if you recall, the way he fights him is he kind of rubs a baseball glove in his face. Like, I'd say, no, flip that kid upside down and hang him from a tree. Throw him into the side of a car as if you are Colossus.
Oh, yeah, no, like, I only bring it up because in that sequence, he is using his powers in a defensive manner.
Defensive, yes, not a... Well, you're right. I did say not even really defensive. They kind of use it defensively, but it's still, like, impish. Like, when he attacks...
Oh, totally.
...the sheriff, it's a stick slapping him with a coat. He's not beating him with a stick. He's not even really fending him off with the stick or like the broom end. He's slapping him with the coat arm. And this is enough to make let's just be very clear here. A sheriff who has definitely murdered people passing through town before. Yeah, yeah. It makes him cower in fear. There's aspects in this movie we have to get to. So let's hit the plot quickly so we can. It starts off with two fucking adorable brats, brother and sister Tia and Tony, in an orphanage, and one of them has clairvoyancy into the future on limited capacity, and the other has telekinesis that has to be channeled through his fucking harmonica. This school, I didn't catch the official name, but I must assume it is Xavier School for Overrated Mediocrities. I mean, like, in terms of 70s paranoia thrillers where the main character has powers and is being hunted by someone who wants to use that power in suits, mid...
there's so much here that's just so standard, speaking of Tony and his harmonica, I was just scrolling through the IMDb trivia trying to find the name of the orphanage, and I just stumbled across, knowing that it was an integral part of the story, Ike Eisenman bought a harmonica and taught himself to play it, unaware that he would be dubbed in the end by professional harmonica player Tommy Morgan.
Yeah. Sorry, kid. This has to be production and soundtrack quality. No, no. No, no.
Welcome to Hollywood, kid, number one. one thing I did want to bring up is I think you're going to hear us a few times talking about how characters or elements that you see here are like blueprints for things that you might see later on in other properties.
Mm-hmm.
Rita Shaw, who played Mrs. Grinley, like the headmistress of the orphanage, is absolutely the blueprint for like every headmistress character you're gonna see in a children's movie for years after this.
Yeah, for a film that doesn't have many sharp edges, this left a lot of cuts along the way. Anyway, So due to the clairvoyancy, they stop a gentleman, Donald Pleasance, from being crushed to death in an auto accident. They just like, hey, buddy, don't get in your car. And he's like, okay. And then a truck plows into it. And he's like, aha. Well, it's very convenient that I have been looking exactly for this kind of thing.
I know.
And my job very specifically was hired to find exactly these kind of things. Anyway, I'm going to report this back to the rich guy who hired me.
And speaking of the rich guy who hired him, I want to rewind a couple of scenes back to the introduction of Aristotle Bolt.
Mm.
Who, when we first meet him, it's Donald Pleasance's Duranian, which, beautiful, beautiful character name. I just enjoy it.
Yeah.
Walking into a meeting where... Name the supposed psychic character archetype that a villain could be meeting with. And Aristotle Bolt is meeting with all of them.
Yeah, except you get this general feeling that, like, they're cliches to the point that it's like, is that Peter Sellers?
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's the thing. He is sold like a Bond villain, but he is the worst Bond villain, and I mean the worst Bond villain. Dude from Quantum of Solace? More interesting.
Yeah.
Colonel Moon, more interesting. Hugo Drax, more interesting. This guy has nothing. He has purchased Bond villainy. He dabbles in Bond villainy, but he himself is not a Bond villain. It's like he's on a vacation. It's like what the rest of the adventures people have at Total Recall are. Like, forget Arnie. This is what everyone else's experience is, where you, your own mediocre, random, schlubby self, gets to have, like, inexplicably an adventure. And it's like, how did this man become a Bond villain? Be fucked if I know. He inherited it? His father was Dr. Killcaw, and man, that guy was evil. But it just didn't carry. Like, you know, the apple apparently fell down the ridge and went into a deep valley far away from the tree.
Yeah, it was like, it's established early and often that this guy is so rich that he owns this mansion that's basically a castle, or again, the villain's lair of every 80s TV show ever.
But then, like, they have to put it in children's terms. You know, he's rich and stuff, but this is directed towards children. So how do you put forward just how super-duper rich he is? He has horses. Like, all I wanted is him to go on this, like, rant about trying to hijack into, like, the DARPANET so that he could take over the Nikkei stock exchange, and the kid what, and like, I'm who likes horses?
Oh yeah, and it's like there, at one point I think it's Duranian who tells the kids to go look out the window, and tells them like that Bolt owns everything they see.
Look out to the horizon. Past the trees, over the grasslands, everything the light touches belongs to someone else.
And he's this rich to the point that he might as well own the entire estate. And he got this by constantly listening to psychics.
I mean, like,
oh, it's glorious.
You know, incredible run of luck to find such accurate psychics, I guess. Incredible. But yeah, like, so he's become somehow this guy. Like, there's no real drive. There's no real reason. He's collecting things that might make him more powerful and rich. There is no agenda. That's the terrifying truth of it. There's no agenda. There's no hand on the wheel. We are in a godless universe.
Oh, no. There is an agenda. His big plan, and we brought up Quantum of Solace here earlier, and I think it needs to come up again for comparison purposes, but we have met these two kids, Tia and Tony, who through convenience and
mostly convenience.
Character details that will come later, mostly convenience, have powers that can basically let them do whatever they want. And Aristotle Bolt's big plan is to use them as living dousing rods to find oil.
That was one of his ways of doing it. That was one of the things he mentioned.
Yeah.
But he was like, you could do anything. And yeah, it's like, it's such a weird plan. So, okay, they illegally kidnap these children by like forging adoption papers and such. And so like, goodbye, random bully child and house full of vagrant children. like, the script is done with you. Get out. We now move on to the next part. And they give them ice cream and toys and everything. And we have the obligatory moment where the kids play with the toys using their powers. And, you know, it's so convenient that they chose to play only with marionettes. That makes it super easy for the effects team.
Well, I'm not so sure about that. Just because, like, that sequence today would have, of course, been done with CG and so forth. Back then, that's wire work.
Oh, yeah. But, like, that's why, like, specifically the kids are playing with marionettes. So that, like, yep, they move exactly as they usually would. There's the wires connected to the strings are invisible. The wire work in this is great. When that a jacket on the broom is flying around, you really can't see the wires. You know they're there because of the way it's flying around and the technique at the time. But the wire work in this is really clean. It's very clean. But it's also mid-70s wire work in a children's movie.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No. Yeah, no, like, the effects are dated as hell, but the reason that I say that the marionette sequence could not have been that easy for the effects department is simply because they have to work around Tia.
Absolutely.
If she's not if she's not in that sequence, then I think that's where it gets much easier because they can space the puppets out more. There's less risk of wires getting tangled and so forth. But she is interacting with them as they're dancing around. It's close quarters. There are sequences like that that are just incredibly well done. There are other sequences that towards the end of the movie that we're going to get to where I feel like everybody in the effects department had to have had a stiff drink before they even attempted them.
Yeah. And like, I'm not crapping on their physical effects department too much because like it was the style at the time and all that, but
yeah.
I feel like getting marionettes to dance on stage around human characters, especially when you have the ability to film and cut and edit and all that, I'm sure at the time it's not all that impressive. It's kind of like, okay. And again, they chose to use toys that made it easier for them. And it's like, it's almost as if like they had put down a toy train set and like they just turned it on and were like, there, it's going magically by the power of the child. And it's like, yeah, no, because maybe in 1975, not every kid has seen an electric train set. That there's just maybe I know too much about how this is made, and the seeing the sausage ruined the sausage. But
I'm in a similar position, but I also think back to a dancing marionette sequence on an early episode of The Muppet Show, where the Jim Henson Company accomplished it by having actual performers on the set, but in suits so that the camera wouldn't pick them up. But of course, this was the 70s, so you could still see them.
And that's it. Like, the way that the Jim Henson Company usually frames things is a little more, like, complicated. Like, I don't think that there was too much going on aside from an overhead rig in this. Whereas I know for a fact the
exactly,
way
that, yeah.
Yeah, whereas, like, I know for a fact the way Jim Henson would have done it is there would be a foreground, a false stage, a two-layer stage with performances by the Muppets on top and the performers under it. You know, like various cameras and mirrors and shit. And it's like they get far more respect because they play with the staging. This, it's child, don't move. Now move your arm. Now dance in this exact pattern, and we're going to move around you. It's just I know it seems like I'm harping on this, but it's just, oh God, even to me, the moments that they chose to show the special effects that they had at their disposal were, it's like, really, that's lackluster. Ugh. Bah, you had such potential. Start a fire. This should be Firestarter. Why is this not Firestarter? It's so close to Firestarter. Just need to spark.
Well, like the thing, it's one of those. It depends on how you look at it, because I defend it because they, like I said, they have to work around a human performer. So a lot of the stuff that you just listed off as to how someone like the Jim Henson Company would have done it is not an option here.
True, but that's more because, and again, like a lack of imagination. This is an entrenched effects department at the end of an era when it came to physical effects. And
yeah.
I like, no offense, they pull stuff off, but it's just like, it's not Roger Rabbit.
Oh, well, I mean, obviously not, because 1975, hell no.
But, well, then again, like, it's not Mary Poppins.
True.
See, it's like a level of commitment, and I don't know if that's just, like, no Walt or something, but, like, it needs another creativity pass on the Disney whimsical side.
True, but I think at the same time with this one, It does get one thing very right, and that's the kids themselves.
Yes, surprisingly not annoying. Well, I mean, the harmonica's annoying, but the kid's not that annoying.
Well, the harmonica, yeah, it gets annoying. For me, it gets annoying in the sense that there are points where you'd swear it seems to switch from harmonica to almost a late 70s synth that's trying to be a harmonica.
Yeah, and just like, you know, do the action, perform the action that you're trying to do. You don't need lead up or to riff on it afterwards. Just whoop, done. It's that, it's like, oh, fucking hell, why are you soloing? We're in peril.
But like for me with the kids, and a lot of this goes to the writing, in that compared to Race to Witch Mountain, from 2009, where they're trying to do the same movie, but it's the standard big budget blockbuster formula.
Mm-hmm.
And it's missing that one important detail that this movie does have over it, which is heart, and the fact that the kids look, sound, and act like kids. Now, extremely smart kids. I grant you that.
See, I never saw Race to Witch Mountain. The extent of it that I have in my knowledge, is the meme of The Rock looking backwards and the child screaming something. And like, I read the Wikipedia on it just to get an idea, and it sounds far more like what I expected this to be, or the turns for this to make. Like, okay, there's a secret government operation. That makes more sense. They're trying to hunt these kids because, just like in the original, turns out that these powers come from them being aliens. Ooh, and they crash landed here, and they're trying to find their way back to their families and such. And it derives from the typical paranoia, kids escaping the government, aliens kind of thing. And then when they go to Witch Mountain, it's a facility, not a vague area with some hills. Like, when I first heard this was called Witch Mountain, like, I was expecting the ending to be something closer to Close Contact, where, like, they go to a very distinct-looking mountain, and atop it, aliens appear. Instead, it's like, we're going to Witch Mountain, and it's like, I don't think that's a mountain. I think that is more of a crest on a hill, and that is definitely a gentle slope. And
oh, yeah.
What is hidden behind those branches? Yeah. It's a spaceship. Which I just hit. It's some bushes. It's fine. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. It's fine. It's fine. At least Kirk put on some fucking cloak.
It's not just a spaceship. It's one of the most adorable things I've seen in a sci-fi film of that era, because it's not just any spaceship. It is a flying saucer that Disney has clearly lifted from the archives from like 20, 30 years earlier.
Oh, yeah. Like, oh, the Bakelite. You can just tell. I wish it went weep 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 a little bit more. It didn't have enough weep weep. But yeah, like, so the kids, because they are, you know, psychic and telekinetic and stuff, pretty soon figure out that, hey, these guys aren't on the level, especially when the guys who aren't on the level turn to the kids and start ranting about how they're going to use them. while Donnie Pleasance is like, shut the fuck up, sir.
When Donald Pleasance is in a movie telling you, no, this is not a good idea.
Don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it. Stop. Stop. Don't do it. Don't stop. And of course the kids, you know, fuck on off. And it's like, yeah, I wonder who could have seen that coming. Anyway, two fascinating things happen. One, they run into an old man with a Winnebago. from there, up kind of occurs. The entire character arc, his entire character arc is the exact same as Up. Just fucking spoiler.
Oh yeah. No, I got major Up vibes the moment Jason O'Day is introduced. But also, I mentioned blueprints for other characters and such that come later in later projects.
Yeah.
Jason O'Day is the blueprint for Doc from Fraggle Rock, and I will not be told different.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, like, this was made in a very different era when an old man who is on his own with a camper can become the hero of two children and their adventure movie. And no one at any point, like, puts out an APB for that creepy old guy who kidnapped some children. It doesn't come up in this. At no point are they like, let's get that old man. It's always those children, or to a lesser extent, that bear. But yeah, like, the rich old bastard and Donald Pleasance hire a redneck sheriff to hunt down the kids, and the redneck sheriff, because a bear is used, Tia becomes enamored with a bear. It's a very minor plot point. It doesn't really go anywhere except there's a bear, and so the sheriff collects a posse.
Yeah, no, it's that bear. It's like, It's a 70s Disney movie, so as soon as that bear is on screen, like, you know immediately what's going to happen.
Yeah, Yeah, I mean, like,
just instantly. And it's wonderful.
Oh, it's a great playful kid scene, but like that bear should have come back at the end somehow. Like, there's a lot of loose elements that now would like be tied in into some aspect, and it's like, ah, you're just not quite there with the method yet. Anyway, because there's a bear on the loose, which is the actual reason for it, but the script doesn't overtly say that. A posse, a heavily armed posse, is assembled to find these two children. And I swear to God, the way they talk about it, it's like they're going to shoot them on sight. They've all got these, like, hunting shotguns and shit, and they're all, like, you know, like, Joe Jack rednecks. Just, yeah, let's go get them. Let's go get them kids. Yeah. Oh, my fuck. I know these are the bad guys, but, well, like, yo.
Remember, though, again, the redneck sheriff. Because after the sequence with the coat and the broom, the like you have all these random townspeople who have been out looking for the kids because they think that they're doing a good thing.
Yeah, that's why they brought the guns.
They think
for the good thing.
Helping.
Yeah.
No. I'm getting to the guns. And then this sequence where the redneck sheriff throws Tia and Tony in jail, and wait, what?
Yeah, no. These children are mildly annoying. I am going to lock them in prison. This is not at all a federal crime on various levels. No. No, it's not at all that I am aiding in kidnapping of children. Oh my God.
And then Tia uses her telekinesis to get Tony his harmonica, and I would know that there is a conversation between Tia and Tony where they're talking specifically about the fact that he needs the harmonica to use his powers, she doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
It boils down to, oh well, it must be because you're a girl. That's.
But there isn't like a moment later on where like both discover that they have the ability to do the other's power if they really believe or something, or like they can become a dyad in the Force and use some super version of their power, or, you know, none of that fucking occurs. The canonical reason given in this movie, because no other reason is given, is because she's a girl. That's it.
It is a terrible reason.
Yeah.
I only noted because, like, there is something.
Yeah. And, well, like, and at the end, they show that, so, okay, well, hold on. The kids eventually get contacted because they find a map in a Starbucks, which is something this kid's carrying. Yeah.
But before we get there, because the entire end of this movie needs to be discussed in so much detail.
Yeah, too many things go spinny after this.
So, like I said, there's the... she telekinetically retrieves Tony's harmonica, and we were talking about the wire work with the props.
Yeah.
And the moment where Tony's harmonica floats between the bars into the jail cell.
There is mostly great wire work in this.
Oh, there's great wire work, and then there's B-movie. Oh, I love that happened. Great wire work.
Yeah, like there's 100 different ways you could have shot that would have looked more realistic. You could have put the bars horizontally, dropped the harmonica through it while shooting in slow-mo, and then just like reversed it. No. We have to do shoddy fucking wire. Yeah, delightful. Is this fucking Sam Raimi?
And so, like, they break out. We get the sequence with the broom and the coat, and then after that, when our beautifully stereotypical redneck sheriff finally recovers his wits, And all those townspeople that were helping to look for the children, he rallies them all together, tells them what happened, and that therefore these kids must be witches.
Must be witches.
From Witch Mountain. Mm-hmm. And now we have a lynch mob.
Yeah, lynch mob that believes two children are witches because a sheriff told them that he got slapped silly by them. I mean, I don't know what's more impressive, that he had the balls to tell that to a braying mob of armed men, or that the braying mob of armed men were so fucking dense that they went, that makes sense. We shouldn't at all question if you've been day drinking again. And then they get in their cars and zoom on off.
Again, it's just movie bliss.
So the kids run into Jason O'Day, who is like a guy in his camper. Thank you very much. And they essentially convince him to take them the rest of the way to where the map that was opened in the Starbucks. Every child has a Starbucks. More should have been made of the Starbucks. It eventually, I assume, was in the sequels and the reboot. I believe there was also a television version of this in the 90s. Anyway, Starbucks.
Yeah. There was a 95 TV movie, which is the only version of this that I have not seen.
Have you seen... the Blair Witch Mountain project.
No, oh, yeah, right. Yeah, no, I just completely forgot about that. I want to track that down just for sheer curiosity.
Reading the title definitely took me a moment of like, he was in Blair Witch? No, wait a minute. Something's wrong here. Blair Witch Mountain. Oh. Anyway. we got to track that down because it was like, what? But like,
I think it was, oh no, they were both in it. Okay.
Yeah.
Never mind. I thought it was
delightful
just
parody, wink and nod, stuff by, Disney, you know how they do. So he is whisking the kids off to Witch Mountain, not a mountain. Meanwhile,
I love how you were not letting this go.
I'm not letting it go. Donald Pleasant has to deal with a bloodthirsty lynch mob. And you can see it on his face where he's like, wait, what's happening? I have lost control of this situation. His boss is coming down to join the chase in a helicopter.
I love this helicopter sequence so much.
Yeah, this ends in a chase to the aforementioned Witch Mountain. Not a mountain. It's a glen. and so it's a Winnebago, like a beautiful luxury Oldsmobile with Donald Pleasance in it. Some good old boys behind them and the helicopter in a relatively slow motion chase. At which point, Steven Spielberg, clearly in the audience, the fuck. Steven and Mel Brooks are sitting there and a scene occurs and both of them go, holy shit, I gotta steal that. And Steven goes off and makes E.T. And Mel goes off and makes Spaceballs because that Winnebago takes off. Ramps right off the bad guys and the aliens fly off and escape the enemy.
And also, side note, make no mistake, both Steven Spielberg and Mel Brooks did it so much better.
Yeah, so much better. I mean, like, let me be clear. That Winnebago is way more space and airworthy than the flying saucer that appears at the end.
The entire Winnebago sequence where it's this beautiful They've clearly shot the background.
Hmm.
And they just took like an image of the Winnebago and put it on top.
Yeah. Yeah. Or, and like.
And just ran the footage to make it look like the Winnebago is flying. Is just. Again. Oh.
It's something
it's
truly
so wonderfully bad.
Ah, it is so bad, and unfortunately, it's not. It's actually not as straightforward as projecting, like putting it in front of a screen. That would look a little better, but also be clearly a prop in front of a screen. No, this is two layers of footage, and the footage that the active layer, the Winnebago and layer helicopter are on, has either in a very, very early process been green screened out. It wouldn't even be green, by the way, to be very clear how early this process is. Or my actual belief, scalpeled. And that is when someone sits there with a scalpel, with just a paper scalpel, and cuts out the object frame by frame and places it frame by frame on the corresponding frame, and then they put a sealant over that, and they copy that physical film that someone has hand glued painstakingly the Winnebago and then helicopter on, because the outlines on them, it's almost as bad as Tron. And make no mistake.
Oh no! You want to talk bad out? You want to talk bad outlines? There's a sequence, slightly before this, but it's still like during the chase where, Tony telekinetically, takes a bag of flour and sends it out the bag of the back of the bagel.
He sure does.
Again, you want outlines, my friend.
Oh, it's so like. Meanwhile, they've got this black cat, Winky, along with them this entire adventure. And not once do they telekinetically send the cat, like throw the cat at the bad guys. Or, like, have the cat talk to someone to fuck with. Lost opportunities. Proto-Salem. Anyway. So,
On the other hand, though, I'm pretty sure this is the one and only movie where you will see pet allergies used as a weapon.
Also, yes. So the Winnebago takes off, which leaves Donnie behind, the rednecks gaping at this flying Winnebago going, "Oh, shucks!" Of course, drive into the aforementioned lake that is always there for rednecks to drive into.
We did mention the Dukes of Hazzard, so that sequence you knew was coming.
And all that's left for the chase, aside from Donnie far behind in the Oldsmobile, is the helicopter. And again, we get a really like two understated a performance from our big bad Bolt when he notices that there's a Winnebago flying beside him and the children are in it. And he attempts to double take, but all he does is kind of look at it twice, and then he looks at it again, and then he motions for the helicopter pilot to look over, and the helicopter pilot gives an even more understated response, where he just looks, he just looks at them. Both of these characters, this is a children's movie, they should be like a gasp and a gape. There is a Winnebago flying next to them. And instead, there's just like, huh, hey, are those the kids we're looking for? No, I don't think they were in a flying Winnebago. Yeah. Huh. And then they fly into the world's fakest cloud and come out, and the helicopter is now flying upside down due to telekinetic shenanigans. And we get to see... Could we have just, like, say, shot normally, like a helicopter, and flipped the frame most of the time? That probably would have worked. We're not going to do that. Could we have split the screen down the middle and just flipped half of it? We could have done that, sure. Could we have reprojected with an upside-down model? Yes! Yes, we could have. Instead, we get the crappy outline flying next to the crappy outline, and together they soar into crapulence. Go, go, my beautiful shithawks. Fly free.
The beautiful, my favorite thing about that sequence, I don't know if you noticed this, but once the helicopter is flipped upside down, most of the time that it's in the air, the blades are just gone. They're just not there.
Well, yeah, and like they do come back. There is a spinning blade there, but it's cut out so horribly.
Yeah.
That it just keeps going, whoop, 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 whoop. How this thing flies, I don't know. Incredible work. There is a moment coming up that, like, let me be clear. When this chase begins, they have a real helicopter flying next to real cars. Midway through, stupid bullshit. But the helicopter starts coming in for a landing. And does it right itself? No. No, it does not. And so it lands propeller first, and in the back of my head I'm like, they've relatively screwed this effect up. Please give me the landing I want. Have the helicopter, the cut to the actual helicopter upside down spinning around, and they do that. They manage.
Yep.
they stick the landing after an absolutely embarrassing display. So technically, it's a completed performance. Well done. You don't show it hitting the ground. Fuck no, you can't afford that. But you definitely do cut to a very old rich man pouring himself out of an upside down helicopter and shouting, "Where are those kids?"
You mentioned day drinking earlier, and
yeah,
don't you wish you could have been in that meeting when the director explained to the visual effects department what he wanted for this sequence?
We're not doing that.
You just want to like and this is a Disney company, so keep that in mind as I say. Couldn't you hear the visual effects department just going, "The fuck you say?"
Yeah. No. Go half-ass that so you never ask me to do it again. Thank you.
And you want us to do that for how much? you could just hear the shot glasses hitting the meeting table right there.
Oh my god. Yes. Jesus Christ. There used to also be a bar on top of the animation studio that I believe was still around at this time, by the way. So.
And now we know why.
Now we know why. Anyway, so everyone arrives to which, not a mountain, no mountain in sight. slight increase in angle. And they pull up to a shrubbery. It's a rather large shrubbery, but it's a shrubbery. And another old, white, crazy-looking man comes out of it and, like, starts running at the kids. But the kids recognize him as their drowned and previously dead uncle. Previously drowned and dead. Who, when they say, "Hey, didn't you drown and die?" goes, "Oh, shark saved me."
Well, if you ask a shark nicely, they'll do anything for you.
And like, this guy is overpowered as fuck.
Oh yeah.
This is the guy who flew the Winnebago. Like, picked it up and flew it the rest of the way. This is the guy who's been telepathic connection with these kids since they called a phone number, and he, apparently so fucking powerful, finally figured out that, oh, there's kids. Wait, I know exactly where you are and what the building you are in is like and who is following you and what their names are and what they are doing. And it's like, dude, you really didn't try to look for these kids, did you? Because I get the feeling that if you committed a day just a single day to really thinking about it, really just sitting in there in Cerebro, you would have found these fucking kids. You're just lazy. Especially being like, we gave them boxes and maps. Listen, the kids will find us if they want to find us. I'm hanging out in my shrubbery. Piss off.
Yeah, it's like, as much as this movie does have a special place in my heart, at the same time, you hear Uncle Benet's explanation about how they loaded all these ships from their home planet with their children and shot them out into space. Superman origin on a grand scale, anyone?
Yeah, and it's like, I like the idea of like, hey, we have to save all these kids, and it doesn't almost matter. We got to send them out there. And it's like, cool. Where is your sense of urgency and importance that when you finally find, like, I know for a fact these kids are on this planet. They should, like, again, this is looking back with like tropes and the way that kids and audiences view things and how they write things now. The initial suspicious people in this movie hunting the kids should have been their own people. And like that should have driven them into the arms of the real bad guys. You know, it's like, why weren't you looking for these fucking kids? They were in an orphanage. They got picked up and like adopted by people who were on the scene. Ask around locally.
I think out of everything that we've talked about that goes completely wrong in this movie, I think the single biggest mistake was having Uncle Benet specifically say that Tony and Tia are so far the only kids to make it back to their encampment successfully.
Yeah.
Because it's already been established that Tony and Tia have been on their own for at least 5 years.
Yeah. And they have done nothing to find these children.
Nope.
Nothing. Incredible.
Yeah, like, you just take out that one line.
He really does seem awfully nefarious. Like, you're gonna go with this stranger you just met because you think he's someone you vaguely remember from a memory that you already admit is, like, sort of fucking hazy and inaccurate? Great! Good policy! Don't die! But, so we get
but,
to
but
our...
I will say, though, I will say, though, that with those memory flashes, as much as they are dropped in at random plot convenient moments, the movie, to me at least, never feels like it stops solely to do those flashes.
No, it doesn't. It's very efficient. It's a very fast moving film for what it is and the time that it's from. And it uses those effectively. It's just a shame that, like, again, they get dropped as soon as necessary, and it wasn't used for more. What you see is what you get. What you see is what you get. There is nothing, and apparently that was like, that's not Disney, that's the original author. It was their approach to writing about aliens.
I can see that.
These children look like human children, but they're aliens. Okay, so like, do they look like aliens otherwise? No. They're kids. They're human kids, but they're aliens. And it's like, okay then. All right. That makes the costume budget very low. That's good. Thank you. Star Trek would like to talk to you. But the grand confrontation, the climax of this between good and evil, is they get in the spaceship, fly away, and the bad guys literally go, huh, okay. And they get in their car and drive away. And Jason O'Day is just left standing there going, huh. I best go find some more kids to creep on. The end. Like, the bad guys just go, huh, and leave. There's no moment when, like, Donnie turns to the rich asshole and goes, you always were an asshole. You wasted my time. You had me hunt children. They nearly got killed. What is wrong with you? No, they just get in the car and go, huh, and leave. They don't even turn to, like, Jason and be like, should we shoot this guy? I mean, like, out of frustration at this point, should we just shoot him? No. They get in the car and they leave, off to go probably doctor more government documents and steal children. I'd like, who the fuck knows what else? Maybe he became a doctor.
I mean, at the like bare minimum, you needed Bolt and Duranian, I think, to look at each other and just be like, yeah, we're not telling anyone about any of this.
Yeah. Or like the sheriff in the back seat, and they go, are we going to tell anyone about this? Hell no.
Yeah.
Not till the day I die, I'm not mentioning this anymore. Yeah, it's just tiny, tiny little aspects that, like, they've been played out more interestingly since, and therefore, you know, total John Carter problem. When you do it first,
oh yeah,
you become the most boring thing eventually, because you are just level one, and the kids are on like quantum mechanics memes. So you're fucked. This movie is a lot like going back and watching like some early stuff that mentions like multiverses and dimensions, and like, so there might be a good multiverse, woo, and a bad one, and you're just like, my man, children understand advanced like dimensional theory. You know, I can see how this was one of the, I mean, it was a very successful children's film at the time. It made $20 million over its entire box office, which doesn't seem like much, but again, at the time, pretty dang good. Adjusted for inflation, that's over $100 million. The budget is unknown. It was an entire like internal thing. They didn't release budgets like that at the time. Like, back then, you only told people a movie's budget if you were trying to impress them.
Yeah, no, I could totally see that. And I think Disney would have probably also been playing a lot of things close to the chest. So they were just never going to release that kind of info anyway.
Exactly. So, you know, this was a success. It spawned a couple of sequels. First was an actual movie, I believe. Second was an early Disney Channel made for TV movie. And then the fourth was the 90s made for Disney Channel or ABC movie.
No, there was only the one theatrical sequel.
Okay. So they all became like ABC / early Disney Channel, stuff, which, like, listen, when you own your own channel, you need content. And when you have an exclusive contract with, I believe first NBC, then ABC, you got to fulfill that and shove it full of shit. You can only give them so many Davy Crockett reruns before they go, okay, what else you got?
Amen to that. And yeah, like for me, I'm certain that I first discovered this on a Disney Sunday Night at the Movies block when I was like 7 years old.
Yeah.
Because I promise you that this would have played there just ad nauseum.
Yeah, we have the rights to it. Therefore, play it again. Play it again. It costs us nothing. Play it again.
And I can promise you that for pretty much my entire childhood, this was the exact kind of thing that would have just grabbed me.
Whereas, like, yeah, it immediately speaks to me of, you would not have been interested in this. Like, me personally, you, nothing. Just, not that I didn't, like, to be fair, I enjoyed this on May aspects watching it now. I had never watched it before.
Yeah.
I have never seen any of these movies. I can appreciate it. I've made a lot of fun of it. Yes, absolutely. But I will make a lot of fun of anything from this era. This was a very cheap era of movie making, and it results in a lot of stuff. I'm frankly surprised that Telly Savalas doesn't appear in this, because he makes cheap ass cameos in everything else that was shot in 1975.
Well, I mean, they already had Donald Pleasance, and like, even that, I will be the first to admit, I can't help but go, how?
Post
how did that happen?
Yeah, here, man, I got a movie for you. Really? You spend most of it either lounging around in a super expensive mansion or sitting in a rather comfortable Oldsmobile. All right, then, I will take that.
And but I mean, like, also for me, I was roughly that same time period. I was also into the Tom and Liz Austin series of mystery books by Eric Wilson. Basically, Hardy Boys, but targeted more towards kids.
There's another thing is, I, when I was a kid, I never read any of those kinds of things. I could never get into it. I read comic books. It took years for me to get into reading books. It wasn't that I didn't want to or anything. It's like the books, the prose books directed at children just do not speak to me at all. Benicula did, because it's it intentionally undermines a lot of cliches and stuff. That spoke to me. But I liked comic books. I read comic books. That was where the characters I was interested in. I tried, but I could never get into Hardy Boys, Nancy Drew, Babysitter's Club, any of that stuff. And I feel those kinds of storylines, those kinds of characters, all of that leads so well into this that it's just a cultural disconnect. You know, I'm too busy reading early Sonic the Hedgehog comics and watching Back to the Future for the 30th time.
Oh, yeah, no, fair enough. For me back then, I would read pretty much anything. I was reading, I said, children's mystery novels, comic books, my dad's Robert Asprin novels.
If it was in the house,
I was probably gonna go for it.
And that's the funny thing. I read random history books, but I wasn't. It comic books. That was what I pretty much the only thing I've read, unless I had to.
But the reason that I bring that up is that I think the best way that I can describe this Escape to Witch Mountain now is simply, this is the cinematic equivalent of going back and reading a novel or whatever that you loved as a child, but reading it when you're an adult. Objectively, you know good and goddamn well that it's terrible by those standards.
Mm-hmm.
But somehow there's that something that you can't quite put your finger on that is still satisfying.
Yeah, no, this is the... fuck, it's the Caribbean resort pizza all over again. Okay, so back in 1997, my family went to Disney World for their 25th anniversary. The castle was a pink cake. It was gaudy and terrible. The resort and everything was great. The trip was great. Everything was great. That was an ugly castle. But we stayed at the Caribbean Beach Resort, I believe. It's their Caribbean-themed resort. So a lot of artificial beaches, stuff like that. Essentially, it's just a fake beach resort within Disney World, so that my parents could be okay, that was a long day. We're going to the beach. And at this there was a food court, and in this food court there was a pizza thing. They sold, I think it was a Planet Pizza, like from Toy Story. Like, you know, they had branded it the same pizza place.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it had a thin crust pizza with powdered Parmesan on it that was and remains the greatest pizza I have ever had, and not a single pizza I have ever had since matches it. It was overly cooked. It was dry. It was way too expensive. But it was delicious, and I would pay any amount of money to have a slice of it again. And that, I feel, is what this movie is to people. Like,
oh, yeah, yeah.
Where it's
yeah.
just like, no, yeah, as you said, you know better. And yet.
Yeah, no, and like, if you're somebody who has never seen this before, do I think that you need to check it out? There's two scenarios. Only two scenarios. One, if you are a really like hardcore Disney aficionado, and you just want, if and it's just something that if Disney put it out, you want to see it, then sure.
I mean, yeah, if you're a Disney adult, or you two, probably already have.
Very, very possibly, but it's I think it's pretty much in that same area as the black hole of potentially forgotten Disney movies.
Yeah, it definitely is. At the very least, it's in the past, like in the sense that I'm sure that somewhere at Disney they're working on ideas to revive it. They're always working on ideas to revive properties that they own. And of course, in 2009, they attempted it with The Rock. But it very much, like when people say the Witch Mountain series, that's the past. Those are old ideas. Yeah. They're in the past. You know, like we can look at them lovingly, but how do you do this again without it just becoming Stranger Things?
I mean, there is, frankly, at this point, there is that. Yeah, and
which is what the 2009 one did even before there was Stranger Things. So,
yeah. And I think if they were to try to do this again, you need the show, you need Tia and Tony to be written and acted the way that they are in this movie. Otherwise, I don't think it works.
Yeah, they need to be like profoundly naive to the level of how to. It's not that their performances are vapid. It's that performances by children at that era of those characters are intentionally written to be vapid. There's nothing yeah. else going on to their characters than exactly what is occurring on screen at that minute.
Oh, yeah. And my reasoning is goes into my second scenario where, yeah, you could and should check this out, which is that If you have like a 5 or 6 year old child that you wanted to introduce science fiction to, I think this would be a good movie for that. Like, if you don't, this could be on Disney Plus. I have no idea.
It is,
but if it's not, hey, there you go. Nice.
Yeah, that's how I watched.
Frankly,
it.
That makes me happy.
Yeah,
nice.
And it immediately starts up the sequel. So I think all of it's there.
Oh, excellent. Well, from what I've heard, don't bother with the sequel.
Don't bother with the sequel. It is a made-for-TV movie from the 80s.
Yeah, and as I've said several times here, like one of the best things in Escape to Witch Mountain is Tia and Tony when they're together. In Race from Witch Mountain, as I understand it, the two of them are separated for pretty much the entire movie.
Yeah, and they have decent chemistry together, so yeah. I can see why they would make that decision to kind of flesh the characters out a little bit more, give them some peril, blah, 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 blah. But yeah, you have to pull them together for some scenes because that's where the chemistry is.
Man, yeah, exactly. Otherwise. But like I said, if you wanted to bring your kid into the genre, this, I think this is a good way to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. There's nothing visually shocking But you get some basic ideas that will come into play in more complicated ways.
Yeah, and if you don't have Disney Plus, I would not be surprised if this is on YouTube.
I mean, yeah, somewhere this will be online for free. It's
you would be able to find old. It. I mean, frankly, yeah.
Yeah, like after a point, with few exceptions, like don't touch the cartoon masterpieces and don't touch stuff like fucking Mary Poppins. But after a certain point, you could probably start leeching off live action Disney stuff and just be like, "You are you using this? No? Okay, cool. How about this? No? You do want the really? You want the Lone Ranger? You wanted to try that again? Yeah, I didn't think so. Yeah, I'm just going to use this. Thank you." David Crockett? Really? You're going to make Davy Crockett? What's next? The Swamp Fox? Disney, put the Swamp Fox down. I mean, violently.
I mean, Disney, the last time you tried to do the Lone Ranger, it was Armie Hammer and Johnny Depp.
And now... Now, to be clear, Johnny Depp has not become a better person, nor has any aspect of his portrayal become better, but technically, Armie Hammer is now worse, so relatively, Johnny Depp is the better off in that horrible thing. It's like, wow, what a clusterfuck. I bet they don't have that on Disney Plus. I bet they do.
Oh, and folks, if you could have seen the visuals with the mental gymnastics that she just tried to do there.
You're both terrible in totally different ways.
Exactly.
Anyway, well, that was fun against my better judgment. That was enjoyable. I will be looking more forward to next week's episode, however, as it's drawn from my childhood. And my childhood had better graphics and effects. Bigger budget.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Next week, we will be answering the immortal question of who framed Roger Rabbit?
And it doesn't matter because we all enjoyed watching it. We're all guilty in one way or another. We all spied on the patty cake. Until then... If you enjoyed it, like, share, subscribe, send us a message, leave us a comment, or email Mike.
If you have any thoughts, comments, criticisms, and so forth that you would like to share with us, we may not care about the criticism a whole lot. However, you can reach us at realgeekshfx@gmail.com. If brevity is your thing, and if you want your comments read on air, brevity would be advisable. We're not picky, but it would be advisable.
I can talk real fast.
You can also reach us... You're editing. You can make the entire show real fast.
I mean, I really could. I could just have this piled on top of each other. And then speed it the fuck up.
But like I say, if brevity is more your thing, we can also be reached on Twitter at RealGeeksHFX. And you can find me at TheMeritimeLord@gmail.com if you actually want to reach me and me only for... some inexplicable reason. But you can you can also find me on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at The Maritime Lord. And Crash,
I can be found at Friday in Halifax on Twitter and at Crash and Burn everywhere else. You're not getting my email. Keep your spam to yourself. Until next time, goodbye from a world far away that happens to look like a water tank in California.
see ya.